Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I have some good news. Anybody interested? And it is good news. Enlightenment is the nature of the universe itself. Enlightenment is the nature of the universe itself. And, of course, if you look closely and your heart and mind is open, you can see that in any true scripture. But for us, the key is not the discovery of it in a source outside of ourselves, but to be the ground of that, to actually understand for ourselves that the nature of the universe is enlightenment. Because, I'll add this to add to what we said in our first meeting, that means that really nothing bad can happen to us if whatever it is that takes place for the purpose of its perfection by something greater than itself, eternally. Which, if you can feel that at all, how many of you can feel that idea, just ever so slightly, even if just that much? See, you think, well, that's, what does that mean exactly? And how does it pertain to me? Because when everything comes down to it, that's what I want to know, okay? I want to know, how does this pertain to me? Because that's what I'm interested in. Yes? Yes, of course that's what you're interested in. C'est moi. So let's look at it. And I'm partial to New Testament ideas. I can find it anywhere, but you know there's a passage that my Father's kingdom has many mansions in it. This is a direct commentary on the fact that there is a continual process that is an eternal process, maybe a better word than continual, where, and you look at it with me so it becomes personal to you, where in any given moment, how many of you have ever been through a crisis in your life? This, we wouldn't be here, would we? Kind of a big thing for us, actually, for most of us, if we've been lucky, is to actually go through some really rough patches. Because it's in the rough patches that we realize that whatever it is we were doing wasn't it. Because without the rough patches, a person goes along thinking that everything's just as honky-dory as it could be, and there's no problems, and then, boom, something happens, and you need to look at yourself. And when enough stuff happens, you stop looking at other people. You actually begin to think to yourself, well, whatever it is that's happening here happened with three people in my life, not just one. Or in three places, not just one place. Or it didn't matter what kind of home I built for myself or what kind of clothes I had or what I did to my body. This stuff keeps happening to me. And when it keeps happening, there's an invitation in it to us. And the invitation is one that we eventually get if we learn the lesson. Now, here's an idea that I often talk about. I'm going to plug it in here. Lessons in life ride in on the back of events. Lessons in life ride in on the back of events. And what's so extraordinary about lessons riding in on the back of events is that there can be, as there are here, 25 people in a room, and there can be 25 lessons for one event. Meaning that one thing can take place, but it'll be a different lesson for each individual that is open to that moment in which what? What is a lesson that we get in our lives other than something that's come along and saying, hey, Guy, you know, hey, Virgil, hey, Dennis, hey, whatever your name is, wake up, man. Because you keep repeating this behavior. You keep going through these relationships. You keep staying stressed regardless of what you do. And I'm trying to show you, meaning life is trying to say through the event, I'm trying to show you that the solution that you have isn't an adequate solution. Not to judge oneself, just this solution doesn't work. So life is saying you got to throw these solutions out. Now here's the problem. At a certain point, we run out of solutions. And that's a glorious thing. Something most of us fear to the absolute end. But we must run out of self-supplied solutions. Because if you examine where those rough patches are, most rough patches are the moment in which your last best solution proved to not be so good. How many of you understand that idea? I solved the problem and now I got the problem back in spades. And in that moment, if we're willing to, usually there's a certain letting go that takes place. Just a general kind of surrender by which we realize that the best that we have to offer, given the best that we know how to do at that moment, isn't enough. And the reason that we fear that so intrinsically is because we think that the end of what we know to do is the same as the end of our possibilities. And it is not. And that's what's so glorious. Because each time I actually come to the end of what I know to do and stay there without punishing myself or hating life or reaching there, lo and behold, something comes in and shows you that the problem wasn't the world, the problem was the you that wanted the world to be the way you wanted it to be. And there's a genuine transformation, a genuine letting go of oneself, because the lesson returned and returned, and finally, you got it, in a manner of speaking. And what did you get? Are you ready? You got enlightened. Didn't you? Can you see it? Here's the problem. You think of enlightenment as being someone walking on water. You know, this is when we think about an enlightened human being, in our minds, we see someone who is either goo-goo-eyed or has every answer that was ever written under the sun and never suffers under any circumstances anything, and flowers follow wherever he walks. And that is not what enlightenment is. Real enlightenment is full participation in life. That's what real enlightenment is. Full participation in God's life. That's what enlightenment is. Full participation. It is nothing that, and I want to add this, it's nothing you can think about. I'll ask you a question. When you were going through the crisis and you couldn't come up with a solution, and you finally had to let go, did you have the solution prior to letting go? No, it's like stupid. Of course I didn't have the solution. If I had the solution, I wouldn't have to go through that terrible tearing in myself. I finally let it go, and then the solution presented itself to me, translated. Then into me came some understanding about the true nature of the problem, and I have seen the problem, and it was me. It was what I thought about myself. It was what I thought life had to be. It was how I thought they had to treat me. On and on and on, you can make a list of the ways in which, when the moment came where you see for yourself that you of yourself are not going to work this out, came a moment of light that came because you did not provide it for yourself. And the light did what? It came into the darkness. Didn't it? See, it's good every once in a while for you not to just stare at me. It's really good for me to see you breathe and to take part in this. This is great. This is joy, actually. Truth is joy. Because you can start to see, you get to share in a life that's so much brighter and broader and deeper and truer and loving than anything you've known. And it all takes part in these little things. This little moment in which there I am and I'm suffering myself terribly. I'm convinced I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life, or that I'll never have this, or that someone is terrible and I'll never forgive them, or whatever it is that's going on. And the event comes back and back and back. And one day, I just realize I have to let this thing go. I can't give myself to it anymore. I don't know the answer. And into that moment of surrender, by law, which we will talk about in later talks, by law, into you comes a bit of light. And are you not enlightened when what was dark is formerly no longer dark? Isn't that enlightenment? That's the nature of the universe. That's how God made it. That's how this intelligence created it, if you have a problem with the word God. This extraordinary, in the beginning was the darkness, and darkness was upon the face of the earth, and if you know it, and then let there be light. That process in its eternal form is repeated continually throughout all of creation for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. Those who begin to see that it's possible to participate in a life that isn't the life at all that we've given ourselves, because what are we stressed about other than the things we've given ourselves? And what is it that finally, if you will, that we let go of in the moment where we no longer can handle our own situation? What is it I let go of? What I gave myself. I gave myself the best I knew to do. And it was okay, too. And this is something else fantastic. It's okay. Sometimes you can do certain things that take you 20, 30 years before you even begin to suspect that it's a limitation and not a power. Have you ever limited yourself with what you thought was a power at the time you started it? Do you understand the question? Like, you think to yourself, I'm going to really empower myself here by going and getting a new education. Because when I have that new education, I'll have the approval I want. When I have the approval I want, I'll feel accepted, and then everything will be great. And then 10 years down the line, you find yourself continuing to give yourself away in order to keep that approval. And so what was right at the moment gradually reveals itself as it must, as being something that you've outgrown. You've outgrown.
Love. The brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
If I told you that you're afraid to outgrow yourself, you wouldn't believe me, because that's what you think you want to do, is outgrow yourself. I tell you, every moment that comes for the caterpillar to turn in the butterfly, you go, "No, I love my legs. I like this green color." So, with that in mind, let's take a nice deep breath and let's see what we can find out for ourselves. I'll tell you a story. There was once a junior executive, ambitious, wanted, as he thought best, to become the CEO. Because if I could become the CEO, and you can fill in the blanks, can't you? Then I wouldn't be the junior executive. I would have the key to the senior restroom facilities. I would eat in the best part of the, yada, 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 yada. So one day, in his aspiration to climb to the top, he gets a break. And the big wig calls him into the office. And he says, "All right, Williams, This is it, man. I'm throwing you in with the tigers. Really? Yeah. What do I have to do? He said, well, I want you to go and I want you to negotiate the first leg of this major deal that we're settling with these people. And I want you to go in there, Williams. And I want you, he said, first, I want you to go in there and I want you to be your usual charming self. But, Williams, I want you to be firm as well. Williams said, charming, firm. Okay, and Williams starts to think about what the CEO told him. And then he said, and Williams, he said, that's not it. He said, when you go in there, I want you also, with that firmness, I want you to show them your willingness to yield, and yet still I want them to know that we're not going to roll over in any deal. So I want you to show them the ruthlessness of yourself, even as you're showing them the gentle side. And Williams is starting to shake and tremble. And then the CEO goes, Williams, what's wrong with you? Nothing, nothing, sir. Everything's okay. And then he said, all right, because there's one more instruction. He said, Williams, he said, lastly, just before you close the deal and you've got them right where you want them, I want you to open it up again so that we can go deeper in the negotiation. And Williams faints on the floor. Williams just rolls over and lies on the ground. And the CEO, obviously concerned, but not too concerned, takes a pitcher of cold water and throws it on Williams' face, and Williams comes to, and the CEO says, Williams, what the heck's wrong with you? Are you not up to the job? And Williams says, well, yeah, sure I am. The CEO says, because you know how you can be, Williams. And Williams says, yes, but sir, which one should I be? Do you ever feel like that? God, what a nightmare. I'm one thing to my kids. I'm another thing to my wife. I'm another thing to my husband. I'm one thing with one group of friends, and with another group of friends, I'm another person. I go shopping, and depending on what I'm wearing, I'm one person, and if I don't care, then I'm that person that doesn't care. I mean, you fill in the blank, and what you'll see is that, in essence, and the point of the talk, is that we don't know what it means to be ourselves. We don't know what it means to be ourselves. We think we do. In fact, all someone has to do is say to you, you don't know what it means to be yourself, and you'll say, I'll show you myself. That's part of one of the tricks that we have to be awake to in our talks together. Because when I say, come awake, or you're sleeping, come back to yourself, the first thing that thought tells you is, I am awake. And by the way, if you ever hear anything and you say, I am awake, that's the proof you were sound asleep. Because when you're awake, you don't have to have it confirmed by a voice in your head that says you're great or that you're illumined. Now, you know, we're born on this planet into a strange kettle of soup, really. Kettle of fish, I think that's the expression. Because it's inherent in us a certain longing that we have to belong to something greater than ourselves. It's inherent in us. And that longing that has a natural foundation, it's stolen very quickly. In fact, it really never has a chance to get off the ground. Because what happens, and I want you to look back a little bit consciously as much as you can at what I'm talking about, how many of you remember ever being young? Grammar school. Remember grammar school or even kindergarten? Do you remember how you began to notice that there were certain groups of people that maybe you wanted to belong to, but they didn't want you to belong to them? And I don't care who you are, unless you happen to be the one group that everybody wanted to belong to. But that's a rare kettle of fish. That's rare in itself. But the point being is that from the very early age, we find ourselves kind of being pushed along, looking to be accepted by our friends from an early age. And that longing to be accepted, which is very powerful, it doesn't end with grammar school. In fact, as we grow older and mature, relatively speaking, that longing to be accepted, all it does is it sort of blossoms out, expands out. We grow from high school, now we're in grammar school, now we're in high school. And to belong, you got to have a nice car, you should have better clothes. I mean, you fill in the blanks for yourself because we all went through different conditions, different environment. But the examination of life as individuals shows not that much different happened to everybody. We all went through that process of feeling quite often that not only weren't we accepted, but when we did what we had to do to get approved by others, often we didn't get the approval we were looking for. And how many of us are still looking for that approval? Do you understand the question? It's deep inside of us because there's a relationship inside of us that this idea of if I could be accepted, then little by little I would feel like I am. I know who I am. I'm accepted. And this figuring out who I am would come to an end. And if I get enough people to approve me, then the thing can go away, and this sort of ache in my soul that's always trying to figure out who I should be, just like Williams, it would diminish itself. It would literally go away. But there's a big problem in all of this, and I think that it should be evident to us, but I'm going to spell it out for us, is that what happens to someone who's always looking to be approved? We sell ourselves. We sell ourselves. But it's so habitual to us, we don't see it. And there's more than that. This is just a kind of a slight tangent from the talk. You should, when like this whole time and for the rest of your life, watch people. I was having lunch after our first meeting, and I was listening to a group of people talking. And, you know, human beings, their casual conversations are really fencing competitions. People are always competing. I don't know if you've ever noticed it. You bring up one thing and someone will top it. They'll let you know that they know what you know, but did you know? And then they'll give you the plus. And then as soon as they do the plus, then someone will try to they'll say no, or they'll try to pull it down, or they'll take it some other direction. And so there's this continual tug of war, a real competition going on at a casual. Have you ever had lunch and been exhausted afterwards? Come on, in a social situation, you get done with lunch, it's supposed to be a nice time, and you're wiped out, especially if you have it with family. You go to family dinner, you're a goner when you're done with that, because all that old stuff being brought up, everybody competing and trying to prove that they did better than you did at whatever they did. Well, can I ask you a question? Why does that go on? Oh, and why do we take part in it? Why do we take part in it, which is really to the root of the talk today? What is it that's taking place inside of any of us when there is a continual longing for this acceptance by which then we'll feel approved, and in feeling approved, feel like we finally found our real self, when anyone can look at you look askew at you, someone can say something to you, and all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put you back together again. So how solid are you? Take a deep breath. Not very solid. Do you understand the point? See, don't be afraid of that. Not very solid. The smallest little barb can sink my boat. And I don't even need to hear it from somebody else. I can be driving in my car and sink my own boat. Have you ever sunk your own boat driving along? So what we are interested in here and working towards is, where does all of that unspoken suffering, that catalyst that's inside of us that is always seeking this acceptance and the approval. What is the root of that? Because if we can find out what the root of that is, then we can get rid of the game of pumping ourselves up, buying what we have to buy, selling ourselves so that someone will look at me and go, "Hey, you're fantastic." Have you ever had somebody, I want you to hear this. Do you know that you could have the whole world come and tell you that you're the greatest thing that ever walked on the surface of the earth? And do you know that you would know the whole world is lying? Do you know that? Because see the contradiction. All of our life, we want people to tell us that we're the greatest thing in the world. And then when they really do, by and large, we think, well, there's something wrong with that person. Because I know I'm not. I know I fished that out of that person. And by the way, if I didn't fish it out of them, and they said something to me that I didn't want to hear about myself, I would prove to them that they were wrong. I beat them into flattery. Well, you don't think the silent treatment is a form of trying to coerce out of someone behavior that you want?
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
So, what we want to be free. Want to be free. And to be free means to understand what the path of freedom is not. And the path of freedom is not winning acceptance of the world around you. The path to freedom is not having people approve of you. No matter how sophisticated you look, do you watch anybody watch television, read the newspapers? Have you ever seen a group of angrier, more frightened, frustrated people in the world than those who have climbed to the top? They hire people to see that people that say bad things about them disappear. That's not having your own life. If we're going to have our own life, we have to understand what's taking our life from us. So I return to the question, what is the root of this endless compromise that takes place in ourselves where we want to be accepted, and to be accepted we have to gain approval, and to gain approval we sell ourselves no matter how we've done it? What's at the root of that? Now this is where it becomes to me the most interesting thing in the world, because you must now make a shift in your mind. Please take a deep breath, because I want you to see this for yourself. The root of that which is forever seeking acceptance and approval in us is that which is forever telling us that we are unacceptable as we are. That's the root of it. That's the root of it. There is something that lives in us, and it's figurative. I mean that lives in us, and we're going to talk about it in the next 2 minutes, that actually causes, by its very nature, that feeling in us that as we are, it just is not enough. We are unacceptable as we are. Now, when I say something like that, isn't it strange that on one hand, if we can be honest and look at ourselves, we do all the time strive for acceptance and approval. In the smallest thing, you can meet somebody, and if you don't make a good impression, you'll go beat yourself up about not making a good impression. You know what? Or you'll think, which is most of us do, what's wrong with that person? They didn't see my brilliance. They didn't see there was something unique about me. And then we'll make ourselves special that way. This that I'm speaking of, where there is that in us that feels as though it is unacceptable, has to be the root of what drives us always to find acceptance. How many of you can see that psychologically true? That there is something, and it's like a thorn. I mean, on a good day, it's not so bad, because on a good day, you know, your hair's right, you got the right clothes on, the wind is blowing in your direction, and things are okay, and maybe you're even witty or something. Who knows what a good day means to us? And there's no problem, because even if they don't like me, I like myself. So the heck with you. But that nature disappears, and up comes this person that's like, you know, doing a song and dance. How do you like that for an image of yourself? You meet somebody, hi, I'm Guy, you know, please like me, I'm nice, you know, and you do a song and dance, but you don't think you're doing a song and dance until maybe the person doesn't approve of you, and then you go into a bigger song and dance, and if that doesn't work, then you just close the curtain on the person because there's something wrong with them. So what is it? What is it that is in us that has us not just believing that as we are, we're unacceptable, but serving the whole idea of being unacceptable to the point that we have sold our soul to gain it? You've heard that passage. What does it profit a man to have gained the whole world and lost his soul? But what does he lose his soul for? To gain what? To belong to something by which my sense of self is corroborated. I'm real because these people and this world agrees. And people strike out to try to find some bigger and bigger world by which they can do it. Oh, and I better throw that in. How come if one is actually confirmed by someone, they need two someones to do it after that? Why is it never enough? Do you understand the question? Why is it never enough possession, never enough power, never enough authority? Why is that? Because I no sooner gain the sense of myself from that than in comes this unacceptable thing that says, this isn't enough, man, you got to go further. And then you're off again searching for that. So here is what is at the root of, inside of ourselves, this unspoken, silent killer called feeling that we are unacceptable as we are. It is, in short, now take a breath, because I have to explain this. I told you we're going to gain new knowledge here. The comparative mind. The comparative mind. That is the source of all suffering relative to a person feeling as though they are always unacceptable as they are. Why is that so? What does that mean, a comparative mind? What is a comparative mind? A comparative mind is that which knows itself by what it is not. Period. That's what a comparative mind is. A comparative mind always knows I always know who I am by what I'm not. Examples. I'm sitting with a group of people, and apparently I'm not important enough because no one's talking to me. Is that not a comparative mind? Am I not defined by what I'm not in that moment? Yes or no? I'm not interesting. So here's a person, and this happens every day. This is why they say a fool is whatever, a fool, sucker is born every minute. You sit at a table, and one day you're not interesting enough, apparently, so you go find some book, How to Swim with Sharks, or whatever it is that you're going to do, so that the next time, or you get a subscription to Time magazine, so that the next time, wherever you're sitting with people, you will be interesting enough. Because you're going to go learn what it means to be interesting. And by the way, there is nothing more boring than a person who has learned to be interesting. Is there? Come on. Like pulling teeth. Sitting with people who think they're interesting is like sitting with a shark. The comparative mind. It is always knowing what something is by what something is not. Now, listen to this, because this is a little bit of a deeper sidebar, but I want to put it in, because it occurred to me when I was thinking about this talk. Do you know that everything, that nothing can be defined without comparison? You think of the definition of anything, and it doesn't exist without comparison. Anything. Which means that the whole way in which everything that we know, all definitions, have their root in a form of comparison. Now, you say, what's wrong with that? Nothing when it comes to practical thought. Nothing when it comes to hot and cold and the natural things that we need to do as human beings. But when you start talking about who am I? What am I? What's my life about? If the only way I can know who I am, what my true nature is, what my life is about, is by comparing it to something else, then am I not the subject of whatever it is that I've compared myself to? Because as soon as it changes, have you ever compared yourself to something, like you think to yourself, I'm not enough, so I need more money. So you go and you make more money. And then something happens because you've defined yourself by that condition to what it was that defined you. And as soon as what defined you goes away, what happens to you? Shoo, straight down. Crash. And then you have to find something new to define yourself by again. So we're talking about what it means to live from a comparative mind. A mind that always gives us our sense of self by thinking about something else. And this takes work. It won't happen in the talk. When we take our breaks and for the rest of your life, you're going to want to learn to be awake and watch some of what we're talking about so that little by little by little you can start to see that what's going on at any given moment is that myself sees life in parts apart from itself. I see life in parts apart from myself. I see my life as being this, as not being that. And everything that I think about life being, I arrive at the conclusion through comparing it to something. Now, ask you a question. How many of you wordlessly can understand that who and what you are can't be defined by any one thing? I mean, just simple, just even simple thought towards it. How can who I am at this moment be dependent upon whether or not the people I'm speaking to like me? If it is, then I can never be true to the people I speak to, can I? It's impossible. Because in order to have their approval, I will sell out what I need to sell out so that in that moment, I will achieve what I have said it means to be a whole man, to be a true person. How can who I am depend upon the kind of home that I have? The kind of car that I drive? The way people think about me, no matter who they are? Because if who I am, my true self, depends upon those kinds of relationships in which the simplest change in them causes me to begin to compare myself again to what was and now feel as though I've lost something. Do I own my own life, or do those people or conditions and circumstances own me? Which is it? They own me, don't they?
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Now, take a deep breath. What are those people? What are those conditions? What are those circumstances? Are they really those people, or are they those ideas that I have vested in myself about them? The ideas, isn't it? The idea about you, not you. The idea that I have. And that's what a comparative mind is. It's a mind that knows itself through thinking about itself. And the thing is that if we could see it, I mean, how many of you would get up in the morning and say to yourself, today is a great day to really wreck my life? It sounds silly, doesn't it? But have you ever done it? You ever get up and a thought greets you? And it tells you that whatever it is you're doing isn't going to work, or this, you're never going to achieve what it is that you hope to achieve. I mean, you fill in the blank for yourself. I'll never be free of this problem. In a moment like that, can you see, listen now, can you see that that which presents to you the problem always brings with it what it is that you need to do in order to overcome it? Can you see how that works? That when something talks to you about a heartache, it talks to you about how to have a heart healed? That these things come in tandem, in pairs? This is what comparison is. Let's cut to the chase. We're talking about the beginning of bringing an end to the way in which we presently think about ourselves and meet life. When you think of the planet Earth, can you see it spinning in space? That they call it the blue planet. Is that blue ball in space, is that the Earth? Or is that an image that comes to mind when we think about the Earth? It's an image, isn't it? The Earth itself is not the picture we hold of in our mind. The Earth itself is a beautiful set of intelligent relationships, invisible and visible. And that those invisible relationships that make up the Earth themselves belong to a broader body of relationships. And that you can see that even though there is this singularity, which is the word we're going to get to, of this thing called the Earth, that its real nature, if you want to say the true self of the Earth, isn't a self at all, but a series of perfect relationships that create something that we call the Earth. Come on, I want you to get that idea. Take a deep breath. When you think of the Earth, you think of a book. You think of a book. You see a book. But a book isn't the picture of a book. A book is a series of words and expressions and alliterations and pictures that makes up what the book conveys. You think about the Earth, you have a tendency just to think about the Earth instead of being able to experience, when you think about the Earth, the fact that it is a set of relationships. That's what you are. That's who you are. That's your true nature. Is a set of relationships that are not defined by anything outside of themselves. Now, let's make that simple as we can. We're going to talk now about a word that I've coined for this talk. We're going to talk about what it means to be a singularity. To be a singularity. We want to be individuals, don't we? Isn't that sort of just ingrained in us? I want to be a true individual. But the path to individuality winds up making us like absolutely everybody. Because you think to yourself, here, how do I become an individual? And then you look out and you see something that says to you, this is what an individual is like, and then you copy it. Isn't that it? Ladies, why is it so painful to go to a party and see someone in the same dress you have? Men, you look at your life and you'll see so many instances where you thought you nailed this individual thing, and then you find out not only didn't you nail it, but the smallest thing can take the whole structure down. And a true individual cannot be shaken. So the word singularity is what we're after. The act of being a singularity. Now these are words, but we're going to describe them. The act of being a singularity. What does it mean to be a singularity? We've talked for 40 minutes already about what we can see has been unessential to us. The unessential life. That which we've struggled for approval, for acceptance, trying to get people to, you know, to somehow or other get us to feel as though at last we're confirmed in ourselves. And if we're honest about it, by God, nothing that we've done to find that sense of confirmation in ourselves, that true individuality that can't be shaken by a change of conditions outside of us, true, unconditional selfhood, that everything we've done to find it has been done by finding it outside of ourselves. Always connected to something we become attached to for the sake of finding freedom. Think about the contradiction in that. How can something that I become attached to ever bring me the freedom that I pursue it for? But when we're in the middle of chasing it, we don't see that as a problem. So now we're going to talk about something that we're calling singularity. And here is the idea of it. We have an essential need. Remember we talked about the difference between need and desire? We have an essential need to be at peace. That is an essential need. And part of that essential need to be at peace is to know that we are in the right place at the right time doing the right thing. And to know it in such a fashion that nothing can come along and convince me that I'm not in the right place doing the right thing at the right time. Have you ever thought to yourself, I'm doing the right thing at the right time, and someone said, no, you're not, and then everything fell apart? Now, there's only one way that that can happen for us, and that is through this idea of this singularity. Because of this following fact, can you find anything in nature, and I mean anything from the smallest to the largest, that wasn't created for the specific purpose of fulfilling a task that only it could do? Can you? I can tell you can't. The smallest leaf, the molecule itself, whatever it is, was created in its essence to do only what it could do. By the way, in the right place, at the right time, and for the right reasons, no matter what it is. How can you be less than that? How can you be less than that? You're not. the comparative mind will drive you from understanding it, but we're talking about discovering the fact of that in ourselves and being willing to participate in it. So I had this idea when I was crafting this idea about singularity. You know what a workstation is? Most of us know what a workstation is. You go to an office, and you've got a cubicle or you've got an office. You have a workstation, right? We're going to have our own personal workstation, our own personal spiritual workstation. What does it mean? It means that I'm going to continue to work at being a singularity. Being a singularity. Now, what does it mean to be a singularity? It means that I'm awake. I'm aware of this comparative mind. Can you see if I'm not aware of my mind telling me I'm unacceptable, that I'm going to do whatever it tells me I need to do to be acceptable? Can you see that? That when it's talking to you in the dark of yourself, it's always telling you what you need to do to come out in the light? The answer isn't to do what that nature, that comparative mind tells us to do. The answer is to see the comparative mind as it's working and to recognize that that is not I. I am not that conflict. It's conflicted because that's the nature of a divided mind. So to work at being a singularity means we can do it right now. I can bring myself into the room and I can actually see that here is a negative thought, a negative feeling, something that's telling me I got to do, get, be, win, whatever it is. And at the moment that that negative thought presents itself to me, I don't need to fight with it. I don't even need to replace it with anything. All I need to do is recognize that the reason it's troubling me is because I've become identified with it. I have become it. And when I become the negative thought or the negative feeling, lo and behold, I become its dupe. How many of you want to be a dupe? How many of you know what a dupe is? It's close to dope. I become that which is used by the darkness. Instead of allowing the living light in me to transform that darkness into what it is intended to do. And that's what the personal workstation is. Meaning the spiritual workstation. I'm sitting, I'm having lunch with people. I'm working, I'm acting out being a singularity. I'm staying present to myself so that when I say the dumb thing, that instead of going back over it, have you ever said something dumb and then lived it for 48 years or after you've done it? See, that's not being a singularity. That's trying to figure out how you can be approved of next time because you won't say the stupid thing. See, I drop it. I drop what divides me. But to drop what divides me, I have to be awake to it. And when I'm awake to what divides me, I'm doing the work of being a singularity. I'm actually living out in that moment. And here's the last thing I'm going to say. I am actually being at that moment that which I was created to be, which is that which transforms the darkness into the light by letting the light reveal that darkness in me. I'm actually at that moment in the right place, doing the right thing for the right reasons. And only I can do that, and only you can do that. And as we do that, lo and behold, the gift of that is given to us. When a man or a woman actually understands what it means to be whole, awake, to practice this act of singularity, in that moment, there is nothing that can happen to them that isn't right and true and bright and good. Now you find out that truth for yourself.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.